Something massive just happened in Europe, and almost nobody is talking about it the way they should be. A government, an actual functioning government with 30,000 employees, just told Microsoft, "We're done. Pack your bags. We're moving on." And while that story is unfolding in northern Germany, on the other side of the world, governments are doing something completely opposite. Building a digital wall around the internet that is supposed to protect your children, but might end up destroying everyone's privacy in the process. Two stories, two completely different directions. Both of them are going to change how you use technology. So sit down, because this week in Linux news hits different. Let's start in Germany, because what is happening in the state of Schleswig-Holstein right now is either the beginning of a revolution or the most ambitious experiment in government IT history. And the answer depends entirely on whether they can pull it off where everyone else has failed. Schleswig-Holstein is one of Germany's 16 states, sitting right at the very top of the country between the North Sea and the Baltic Sea. It is not a small operation. We are talking about 30,000 government workers, civil servants, judges, police officers, people who need functioning computers every single day to do critical, life-affecting work. And this state just announced it is replacing every single Microsoft product across that entire workforce. Not some of them, all of them. Windows is going, Microsoft Office is going, Microsoft Teams is gone, Microsoft Exchange gone. And what is replacing all of it? Linux, LibreOffice, Thunderbird, open source software that anyone can look at, modify, and run for free. The deadline? 2026. The goal? Complete digital independence from American tech giants. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, okay, cool. Another government says it will switch to Linux. Big deal. Governments say stuff all the time and then go quietly back to Windows 6 months later. And you would not be entirely wrong to think that, because the history here is actually painful. Let's talk about Munich, because Munich is the ghost story that haunts every government IT department in Europe that even thinks about touching Linux. Back in 2003, yes, over 20 years ago, the city of Munich sat down and made a decision. Microsoft's Windows NT 4.0 was reaching end of life. They needed a new operating system. They had two choices: move to Windows XP or go open source. They voted for Linux. It was a massive deal. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, the same man who publicly called Linux a cancer, reportedly left his ski vacation to personally fly to Munich and talk the mayor out of it. And he failed. Munich went ahead. They built their own Linux distribution called Linux, based on Ubuntu. By 2013, over 15,000 desktop computers across the city administration were running Linux. They had created 18,000 LibreOffice templates. The project lead at the time reported the city had saved 11.7 million euros compared to sticking with Microsoft. Sounds like a success story, right? Here's where it falls apart. In 2014, Munich got a new mayor, Dieter Reiter, and Reiter was, by his own admission, a Microsoft fan. The political support that had kept Linux alive disappeared overnight. Problems that had always existed. Compatibility issues with other German government offices, sending documents in proprietary Microsoft formats. Some unhappy users, who missed Windows, were suddenly amplified and used as political ammunition. An Accenture study was commissioned to look at the IT problems. Accenture, by the way, is a Microsoft partner. The study found problems, some technical, but mostly organizational. None of the problems were actual what unique to Linux, but the political narrative had already been written. In November 2017, Munich City Council voted to go back to Windows. The rollout cost? Approximately 49 million euros of taxpayer money, just to undo what they had built. 20 years of history, a cautionary tale told to every Linux enthusiast who gets too optimistic. And then, because Munich apparently could not pick a lane, IN 2020, the newly elected city government flipped again. The Green Party and Social Democrats came to power and said, actually, let's go back to open source. The coalition agreement literally uses the phrase, and this is a real political slogan that came out of this chaos, öffentliches Geld, öffentlicher Code. Public money, public code. They established an open source program office in October 2024 with a dedicated budget. Munich is now, once again, trying to move toward open source. So that is the graveyard Schleswig-Holstein is building on. That is the history. And yet, the state is not just saying it will try. The key difference here is why they're doing it, and the why matters enormously. Digitalization Minister Dirk Schroeder has been the person leading this charge, and he has been remarkably clear about the motivation. This is not about saving money on licensing fees, although that is a side benefit. This is about sovereignty. Data sovereignty. The fundamental question of, when your government processes citizen data, where does that data actually go? Who has legal access to it? Here is the uncomfortable reality that Schroeder has pointed to directly. When you use Microsoft's cloud services, your data sits on servers subject to U.S. law. There's a piece of American legislation called the Cloud Act, the Clarifying Lawful Overseas Use of Data Act, that allows U.S. law enforcement to compel American tech companies to hand over data, even if it is stored on servers in Europe. For a government handling sensitive citizen information, judicial records, police data, that is a genuinely serious vulnerability. It is not paranoia. It is a legal fact. By moving everything to Linux, switching cloud services to Nextcloud hosted on German soil, and replacing the entire Microsoft stack with open source alternatives, Schleswig-Holstein is essentially saying, our data stays in our jurisdiction. Full stop. Schroeder also pointed to something that does not get said enough in these conversations. The war in Ukraine revealed how dangerous overdependence on a single external supplier can be. Europe learned it with energy. Gas pipelines, oil imports, entire economies held hostage by supply chains controlled by foreign powers. Schroeder explicitly drew that parallel to digital infrastructure. If tomorrow Microsoft decided to change its licensing terms, double its prices, or simply sunset a product that 30,000 government workers depend on, what exactly is the plan? With proprietary software, you are at the mercy of a boardroom in Redmond, Washington. With open source software, the code exists. You own your deployment. Nobody can pull the rug out from under you. This is not just Schleswig-Holstein talking into a void either. This is part of a growing European movement. France's gendarmerie, their national police force, has been running Linux since the early 2000s. India's Ministry of Defense launched its own Linux distribution called Maya OS in 2023. Denmark is exploring open source alternatives in major cities. The EU's Interoperable Europe Act came into effect in 2024, specifically designed to accelerate open source adoption across European Union member states. And the European Commission itself issued antitrust objections to Microsoft over the way it bundles Teams with Office 365 and Microsoft 365, questioning whether it violates competition law. The migration plan itself is structured carefully. This is not a flip a switch on Monday situation. It started with LibreOffice. They tested it for 2 years before going public. In 2021, they announced plans to move 25,000 computers to LibreOffice by 2026. Once that pilot was running, they expanded the scope to include the full Linux operating system migration. Email moves from Microsoft Exchange to Thunderbird. Collaboration moves to open tools. The state is investing in what Schroeder calls real programming services from our domestic digital economy, meaning they are building capability locally rather than just paying licensing fees abroad. Will it work? Genuinely, honestly, the technical challenges are real. Compatibility is the biggest one. When other German government offices still send files in Microsoft formats, when court systems and police, databases were built around Windows-specific software. Making everything talk to each other on Linux requires serious engineering effort. The mistakes Munich made were real. But the key factor is political will. Munich's Limux died not because Linux failed technically. The IT lead himself said most compatibility issues had been solved. It died because the political leadership stopped supporting it. Schleswig-Holstein currently has that political support. Whether it survives the next election cycle is the real question nobody can answer yet. And here is the thing that makes this story matter beyond Germany's borders. Every successful large-scale government Linux migration is proof of concept for the next one. Every failure sets the movement back years. The eyes of the open source world are on Schleswig-Holstein right now. If they make it to 2026 with 30,000 employees running Linux, it reshapes the entire conversation about government IT globally. If they fail, Munich's ghost gets a new chapter. Now let us pivot completely, because while Germany is trying to build more freedom into its digital infrastructure, another story is unfolding that is doing the exact opposite. And this one affects you. Right now, today. Age verification on the internet is getting worse. Not slowly, incrementally worse, dramatically, recklessly, privacy destructively worse. And the people pushing these laws genuinely believe they are protecting children. That sincerity is part of what makes this so complicated and so dangerous. Here is where we are. As of July 25th, 2025, the UK's Online Safety Act came into full effect. Any website that hosts adult content, and that definition is broad enough to include social media platforms, dating apps, video sharing sites, online forums, cloud sharing services, basically anything with user-generated content, now has to implement age verification to prevent minors from accessing anything deemed harmful. Not just adult content, harmful content, which is defined by regulators. Users can no longer just click a box saying, yes, I am over 18. They have to prove it. Australia went even further. On December 10th, 2025, Australia's social media age ban came into force. 10 platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Snapchat, YouTube, TikTok, Kick, Reddit, Twitch, and X are now legally required to block all users under 16 years old. Not from adult content, from the platforms entirely. The fines for non-compliance can reach $49.5 million Australian dollars. That is roughly $32 million US dollars. All 10 platforms said they would comply. Young people woke up one day to find their accounts gone. Brazil passed a similar law. The EU is testing a mandatory age verification app. The European Commission has already proposed a EU digital minimum age of 16 for social media. Access. France's courts ruled that porn websites must verify user ages. The UK's Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill received royal assent on April 29, 2026, giving ministers the direct power to impose age restrictions on platforms. This is happening everywhere, simultaneously, at speed. And there is a critical question almost nobody in the halls of power is asking seriously enough. Does any of this actually work? Look at the data coming out of Australia. Researchers found that 9 out of 10 of the largest social media platforms are still not routinely confirming self-declared ages for new accounts, even after the ban came into force, meaning a child can still type in a fake birthday and get in. The law is creating enormous compliance costs and privacy risks for millions of adult users, while the kids it is supposedly protecting are still getting in anyway, just with a false date of birth entered. In 30 seconds, a Canadian legal expert named Michael Geist put it plainly. Strip away the political theater, and what remains is this. The ban will not keep most kids off the platforms. It will not measurably reduce the harms. The Australian regulator has yet to find evidence that it has reduced harm at all, and it imposes privacy and free expression costs on every single person who wants to use ordinary social media services. The privacy dimension here is where things get genuinely alarming, because here is what age verification actually requires in practice. Not a quick glance at an ID like a nightclub bouncer does. It requires you to upload your government-issued passport or driver's license, or scan your face using biometric technology to a third-party company. That company stores it, processes it, and in many cases, does more with it than just check your age. The EEPF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, one of the most respected digital rights organizations in the world, investigated the companies being used for age verification and found something that should make your blood run cold. Companies like Persona, used by Reddit and Discord, and FaceTech, used by Grindr, these age verification providers are reusing the data they collect for advertising purposes. You hand over your passport to prove your age. They use your biometric data and personal information to build an advertising profile. That is not hypothetical. That is what is already happening. And then it got concrete. In October 2025, a third-party vendor used by Discord to handle ID checks in the UK got hacked. Approximately 70,000 government ID photos were exposed. Passports, driver's licenses, the most sensitive identity documents people carry, handed over to prove they are old enough to use a chat platform, now floating in a breach. And that is one incident from one company in one country in 1 month. These systems are being rolled out globally, at speed, with inadequate security standards, by companies whose core business model is monetizing the data they collect. This is not a niche concern. In March 2026, an open letter signed by 371 security and privacy academics from 29 countries, including Ronald Rivest, winner of the Turing Award, and Bart Pernille, president of the International Association for Cryptologic Research, told governments directly, "It is dangerous and socially unacceptable to put mandatory age verification in place without understanding what it means for security, privacy, and equality." These are not random bloggers. These are the people who literally invented modern cryptography. And they are saying, stop. You do not know what you're building. The ICO, the UK's Information Commissioner's Office, issued a £14 million fine to Reddit specifically for failures in checking user ages. That fine is designed to force compliance, but it is also forcing compliance with a system that privacy experts are saying is fundamentally broken. The ICO's approach is being criticized even by organizations sympathetic to child safety goals, because the rush to implement age verification is pushing platforms toward the cheapest available solutions, which happen to have the worst privacy standards. Spain's Data Protection Authority recently fined Yoti, a company literally marketed as a privacy-friendly age verification provider, €950,000 for data protection violations. Even the supposedly good option is failing. The Proton CEO, the encrypted email company whose entire business model is privacy, said publicly that the global age verification push will mean what he called the death of anonymity online. Because here is the logical endpoint of these systems. Once you have to prove your identity to access any part of the internet considered potentially harmful, and that definition keeps expanding, You have created the infrastructure for a surveillance layer over all online activity. You are not anonymous anymore. Every site visit, every forum post, every search is now attached to a verified identity. That is a database that governments can access, that hackers can target, and that companies can monetize. It is surveillance capitalism with extra steps and a child safety bow tied on top. And what about the kids these laws are supposedly protecting? The Electronic Frontier Foundation makes a point that gets lost entirely in the political debate. Age verification systems actually increase the risk of identity theft for children. Because to verify a child's age, you often need to also collect parental information. That data is now in the system. Children are already disproportionately targeted by identity theft. These mandates increase their exposure. The internet is also where many young people find community, access mental health resources, and explore their identities, especially LGBTQ youth who may not have those resources at home. Blanket restrictions do not account for any of that nuance. The VPN surge tells you everything you need to know about how effective these laws are in practice. In July 2025, after the UK's Online Safety Act kicked in and major sites like X, Reddit, and Pornhub implemented age verification checks, VPN apps became the most downloaded apps on Apple's App Store in the UK. The former Children's Commissioner, Rachel D'Souza, told the BBC that VPNs are absolutely a loophole that needs closing and called for age verification on VPNs themselves. The government quickly walked that back and said VPNs are legal, tools with no plans to ban them. But the direction is obvious. Australia is already having serious internal debate about whether to ban VPNs entirely as a consequence of its social media age verification law. The term being used is, and this is a real phrase from real regulators, Swiss cheese-like age verification, full of holes. And the proposed solution to the holes is not better age verification. It is closing off the escape routes, which means restricting VPNs, which means restricting privacy tools that millions of legitimate adult users depend on for security and anonymity. This is how mission creep works in technology law. You start with a goal everyone agrees on, protect children. You pass a law everyone can vote for without political risk. The law is technically ineffective, full of loopholes. So you pass another law to close the loopholes, and another. And each new law is slightly more invasive, slightly less privacy respecting, slightly more surveillance oriented than the last. Until one day, you look up and realize you have built an internet where every user is required to be identified, tracked, and verified before accessing anything a regulator has decided might be harmful. That is not a paranoid dystopia. That is the logical trajectory of the current legislative direction. So here is where we land on both of these stories. In Germany, Schleswig-Holstein is making a bet, an expensive, complicated, politically fragile bet, that digital sovereignty is worth fighting for, that the right to control your own infrastructure, your own data, your own code, matters enough to invest years of work and political capital to achieve it. The open source community has been saying this for decades. Now a government with 30,000 employees is backing that argument with real money and real commitment. Will it work? Watch the 2026 deadline closely. The whole world will be. And on age verification, the direction is clear, the momentum is building, and the people raising alarms are some of the most credible experts in computer science and digital rights on the planet. 371 academics, the EFF, privacy CEOs, cryptography pioneers, all of them saying the same thing. The cure is becoming worse than the disease. The tools being built to protect children are simultaneously building the largest identity surveillance infrastructure the commercial internet has ever seen. And once that infrastructure exists, once every user has been verified, identified, and logged, it does not go away. It gets used by platforms, by advertisers, by governments, by hackers. The two stories this week are not unrelated. One country is fighting to take back control of its digital future. The rest of the world is quietly, law by law, handing that control away. That is your Linux Weekly News. Stay curious. Stay informed. And if someone in your government tries to explain that uploading your passport to a third-party ad company is how we protect children, you now know exactly what questions to ask.